British Spy Stories, Season 1. Spy or Traitor? Episode 15. Tourists and locals flow constantly in and out of the doors to Nice Côte d'Azur Airport, as Gabby leans against her car, reading a copy of Le Monde. The midday air hangs heavily around the coastline, and she watches the comings and goings, second-guessing the people and their histories as they move from the artifice of airport lighting into the French sunshine. She thinks about Riverside and how much she can trust him. It doesn't make sense that he has given her what seems to be genuine intel on illicit activity. But you do have to put real cheese in a mousetrap, or it doesn't work. Hans is wearing a green shirt and light grey trousers. She sees him and starts to walk so that their paths gradually get closer. He spots her and stops. They do not signal to each other, but she turns, and he follows her. Gabby gets into her car and drives to the exit road. Then Hans jumps in, and she accelerates back towards Nice. They find a small Italian restaurant in the streets above the old town, and take a table inside, at the back.
"Thanks for coming, Hans," she says after they order.
The waiter pours two glasses of Sauvignon.
"My pleasure. What do we need to do?"
"Tonight," she begins, "a cache of drunks will arrive at the marina just along the coast from here. We need to disrupt it."
"Because?"
"It's been organised by a man who has a contract out on my life, and who was responsible for your knife man. We need to undermine his power base so he realises he's not going to win the war."
"War?" says Hans. "Strong words, Gab."
"That's what it feels like," she says. "Two attempts on my life in 6 days and the guy in your bar. It's an organised and credible threat."
"This is Sebastian Ulrich, right?" says Hans. She nods.
"How did you know, Gordon?"
She looks at him.
"I looked on Oberon."
"Why did you mention him, though?"
says Gabby.
"It could have been any number of people."
"I know he has a Berlin cell, because I've been getting intel as part of my role at the Met Bar," says Hans. "And Ulrich is the only one who has both a network of scale in cities across Europe and is based in the south of France."
Gabby wonders if his analysis has been briefed to him.
"What did you do with the USB stick I gave you, by the way?"
"Safely hidden in Berlin, Gab."
He senses her nervousness. They talk on over lunch, then go to the hotel to prepare. She has booked the room next door for him, and they both sleep briefly in the afternoon, but not at the same time. In the early evening, he knocks on her door, and she opens it.
"Ready?"
he says.
"Almost. Come in."
She goes into the bathroom.
"So, you getting near the mole, Gab?"
Hans calls from the bedroom.
"Not really."
"What's your latest idea?"
"I've got various bits of intel,"
she says, emerging from the bathroom.
"Some files from Brussels, but I acquired data on traffic nodes the night that Mac died, and Riverside gave me some comms traces."
"Does it point to anyone?" asks Hans.
"Not consistently."
"We can go through it, if you like."
"Sure, in the morning," she says. "When are you flying back?"
"I can stay for a few days and help you. I'm off duties because of my leg."
"You in pain, then?"
"No, over-egged it a bit," he says. "I'm in no rush to get back to the Met Bar, though."
"I'm getting that impression."
"Not enough going on. Well, not that goes through me." "I might leave."
"What would you do?"
"No idea. Civil servant somewhere?" says Hans.
"Can't the Honourable Rathbones offer you something? Hasn't Daddy got a business you could run?"
"You can fuck right off," says Hans.
"Just saying."
She holds her hands up in playful surrender.
"There must be a few doors that you could push open easily there."
I'm not sure the minor gentrified class is like that anymore, he says. A few decades ago, I could have walked into Sotheby's or White's Club and offered some job that I wasn't qualified for. You went to private school, though, he says. What did your father do? Her face drops.
I don't talk about my family.
What, never? He says, still rolling on with the flow of the conversation, then realizing that the rolling has come to a sudden standstill. Did something happen? He says. She looks sullen, then just says,
Dad's dead.
She turns away to the open window, half steps out to the balcony, and looks unblinking at the horizon.
I didn't mean to drag anything up, Gab.
Forget it,
she says.
I try to.
If you ever want...
I don't, Gordon. That's why I'm in this job. I'm isolated for a reason, so no one can ever get to me. Anything else wouldn't work.
It must be tough inside that shell of yours.
Time to go,
she says softly. And they pack up and head out to the rendezvous. Gabrielle parks her Z4 in the back streets. She is wearing trousers and a light jacket with lace-up flats. She carries her Smith & Wesson in a holder under one arm and an Aspinall Brown midi tote handbag over her shoulder with four flash bombs inside. They walk to the marina, find a bar that overlooks the main moorings, and order a margarita and a Negroni. They chat and both keep a lookout for any of the characters in Ulrich's gang, as Gabby went through the photographs and profiles of the players with Hans over lunch. Dusk runs in smoothly across the Mediterranean, and the lights around the marina gradually shine out to create a playground for the rich. Men and women walk from the boats and hotels to create a hubbub that rises across the hulls and ropes of the waterfront. Hans is the first to see Lebedev.
Gab, is that?
He indicates, and her eyes widen in the affirmative. They watch the man. He has a pre-booked table in the bar next to theirs. Lebedev sits down, and within minutes is joined by Robinson. The men talk and order several drinks over the next couple of hours. As Gabby and Hans are starting to wonder if the whole thing has been a waste of time, Robinson and Lebedev finish up their last drinks and walk off towards the far side of the marina. Gabby and Hans follow through the crowd. Robinson particularly is looking around nervously every few minutes, and she is sure he looks directly at her more than once, but he doesn't react. She and Hans dodge and swerve through the people, all of whom seem to be coming in the opposite direction. The crowd seems never ending, and Gabby loses sight of the men they're tailing. She looks across at Hans, who puts up his open palms to the sky to show that he doesn't know any more than she does. Gabby is getting worried that they have lost their quarries. Then, right at the moment when she is about to turn back, she sees the criminals skirting the outside of the moorings and heading down the long west side of the docks, away from the bustle and into a deserted stretch of quayside. The men reach a jetty at the far end that sits at the mouth of the harbour. Two berths have been left empty, and Lebedev talks to three men sitting on a bench at that part of the dock. Gabby and Hans drop down out of sight behind a boat showroom that sits on the very edge of an area of delineated moorings. They wait for movement. The minutes go by. As the day cools, the pools of light under each lamp around the marina buzz less as the insects die off at the end of their single day of existence. Gradually, across the open water, the rhythmic beat of a boat's engine skates in from the distance. The noise gets closer, then cuts dead. A 50-foot boat drifts in from the half-darkness
and glides on the tide over the last few feet to the mooring.
All good?
They hear Lebedev call out to the pilot of the craft, who gives a thumbs up. The boatmen throw ropes ashore, and the others tie off the cords to nearby bollards. Robinson is the first on board and disappears below deck. He reappears seconds later and gives Lebedev a big smile.
"Where's Ulrich?" says Robinson.
"He's not coming."
"You taking the piss?"
"We can handle it, Larry."
Lebedev starts to direct the men to unload. As packages come up from below, Gabby hears a vehicle heading along the marina towards them. She drops her head down to remain hidden, and Hans follows suit. A van appears from around the corner of the final building and stops next to the boat. Two men get out and open the back up to start receiving the goods. Gabby reaches into her bag and pulls out a flash bomb. She sets it live and bowls it across the concrete to just under the front of the van. The bomb explodes in the night and lifts the front of the van off the ground. The men start to shout, drop their packages and draw weapons. Gabby throws a second bomb, this time at the back of the van. The vehicle lurches with the impact of the blast, and fire engulfs the rear doors.
"Now,"
she says to Hans. They each run at speed to opposite ends of their hiding place and start rapid fire into the van. The gang cannot see their assailants due to the floodlights across the roof of the showroom. Lebedev runs along the quay to the front of the boat and fires off rounds in the direction of Gabby, but without being able to see her. Hans circles round the far side of the mooring, draws the fire of Robinson and his men. Gradually, step by step, while under fire from two gunmen, Gabby moves towards the boat. She reaches the water's edge and has run out of cover. In the 2 seconds that the bullets coming from the gang intensify, she computes timings. She falls back behind a brick store that sits at the far end of the dock and waits. The third blast comes within seconds. Hans has unleashed a flash bomb into the back of the boat. Raw flames spew up, swamping the deck and running at speed to flare up around the wheel. 2 men caught coming up the stairs from below deck are caught in the fire. One jumps overboard and the other falls back down the stairwell. As Lebedev and his men turn their attention to the fire on board, Gabby takes the final incendiary and throws it on the front deck of the boat. It explodes with ferocity, taking the upper portion of the front windows with it and creating an inferno. Gabrielle skirts away from the burning craft and back down the outside of the marina buildings. She finds an opening and watches the flames for a second, then realizes she can't see Hans. The plan was that they both retreat after the 4th bomb, but there is no sign of him. Her mind flicks through the options. She darts out from her cover to the boats moored nearer to the town and drops down behind one. She jumps into a small motorboat that is hanging off the back of one of the craft and silently lowers it into the water. Gabby pilots the small boat out towards the burning, keeping as close as she can to the larger yachts so that the gang can't see she's coming. She is 2 boats away from the fire and can see Lebedev and Robinson desperately trying to recover any boxes of drugs from the hold. She can't see Hans and ties her motorboat alongside a yacht, then clambers up the side. She keeps low and creeps nearer to the gang. As she reaches the aft deck, she sees Hans. He has a red stain on his shirt and is lying behind 3 large crates by the dockside. But he is moving. A car speeds along the roadway of the marina and skids to a halt near the van that has all but burnt out. More gang members fall out of the car and start to help putting out the fire. Gabby jumps across to landside,
runs to the crates and drops down next to Hans.
Gordon,
she says.
How bad?
Not serious, he replies. Bullet skimmed my ribs. Bloody painful, though.
She puts an arm around him and lifts him up. Together, they crouch down and move as fast as his wound allows. She gets the two of them into the motorboat, opens up the throttle and speeds away across the cool water. They look back at the smoke and the flames, billowing up into the night sky. The shell of the van is utterly destroyed. As Gabby turns away and heads east, a loud shudder breaks the air, and a fireball rises where the boat had been. They can see people scurrying along the dock from the town to see what has happened in the marina. She looks at Hans and can see the fire reflected in his eyes as he watches their handiwork disappear into the darkness. She steers the tiny boat back towards Nice, hugging the coastline. They slip through the water around the airport perimeter and onto the next bay. They run the craft up on the Plage de Carras and abandon it, then walk back through the deserted streets, Hans without one shoe that was lost somewhere on the quayside. Her face is blackened, but her eyes are shining brightly.